From Erie to Elizabethtown, Williamsport to Uniontown, this is Lincoln Radio Journal. On this edition, fossil fuels are portrayed as the bad guy by climate change activists, but they are necessary to reach CO2 reduction goals. Stephanie Caterino Wissman from the Pennsylvania Division of the American Petroleum Institute is here to explain. In another example of state government picking winners and losers only to lose taxpayer dollars, Frank Gamrat and Eric Montardi focus this week's Allegheny Institute report on the millions lost in loans and grants to Acquion. And rather than squandering trillions on an infrastructure spending spree, Congress should encourage public-private partnerships to improve our nation's highways. Ashley Klingensmith from Americans for Prosperity, Pennsylvania, has a Lincoln Radio Journal commentary. I'm Loman Henry, and welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. Radical environmentalists and the Biden administration are seeking to do away with the use of fossil fuels. Not only is that impractical, but it would inflict serious economic damage on the state's economy. And in fact, it would make CO2 reduction goals impossible to reach. Here to sort through all of this is Stephanie Caterino Wissman. Stephanie is Executive Director of the American Petroleum Institute's Pennsylvania Division. Stephanie, welcome back to Lincoln Radio Journal. Stephanie, before we get into the policy issues, tell us a little bit about the scope and importance of fossil fuels to the economy here in Pennsylvania.
Sure, Loman. Well, I can tell you that the fossil fuel industry has been an absolute game changer here in Pennsylvania and across the country. With the advent of hydraulic fracturing technology combined with horizontal drilling is allowing us to get to these deep natural gas reserves here in Pennsylvania that you find within the Marcellus Shale and also the Utica Shale underneath Pennsylvania. So when you take a look at it from an economic perspective, you know, give or take 10, 11 years ago is when we had the technological advancements to tap into these resources. And per a study that we commissioned last year, we found that nearly 500,000 direct and indirect jobs are supported by the natural gas and oil industry in Pennsylvania. And the industry's contributed over $78 billion to the Pennsylvania economy. So that's every facet of the natural gas and oil industry, from the production jobs all the way to the jobs at a retail gasoline station. So all segments of the industry comprise that nearly 500,000 jobs number.
As important as this industry is to Pennsylvania, Stephanie, it does not have a friend in the Biden administration and the policies and various steps that it has taken so far. And it's a little over 100 days now that it has been in office. Let's parse through some of these policy issues. And let's start out with this so-called infrastructure plan. It's a massive, almost $2 trillion proposal. But is there money in there for pipelines and for the development of the fossil fuels that, as you've just pointed out, are so vital to Pennsylvania's economy?
From what we've seen from the infrastructure plan, you know, we do support the Biden administration's goal of modernizing the nation's infrastructure, including roads, bridges, rail, and ports. And we also welcome any efforts that address the risks of climate change. But at the same time, this proposal really misses quite an opportunity to take an across-the-board approach to addressing all of our infrastructure needs, including modern pipelines. So really, the president's infrastructure plan is silent when it comes to modern pipelines, which is the most efficient and safest way to transport our energy.
Are there any tax implications for fossil fuel providers, purveyors in the Biden infrastructure plan?
Well, we do know that there are some bills that have been introduced in Congress, and I don't know specifically if it's in the infrastructure plan, but there are proposals out there that are targeting specific industries with new taxes, including the natural gas and oil industry, that would only undermine the nation's economic recovery and jeopardize these good-paying jobs, including union jobs. And it is important, too, Loman, that folks realize that our industry receives no special tax treatment and will continue to advocate for a tax code that supports a level playing field for all economic sectors, including sectors along with policies that sustain and grow the billions of dollars in government revenue that we, quite frankly, help generate.
One of the very first steps that the president took, matter of fact, I believe it was an executive order on his very first day in office, was to put a halt to development of the Keystone XL pipeline. Talk a little bit about that pipeline. If you would explain to our listeners what it is, why it was important, and where things stand with it now.
It was very important, and the Keystone XL pipeline had been through, just to give a historical perspective, had been through 10 years of extensive environmental reviews and consistently demonstrated a strong commitment to environmental progress, including a goal to achieve net zero emissions in year 2023. And this is a project that is being built by our allies, by a company based in Canada, a very strong ally of the United States. And we were ready to go, right? The industry was ready to go with this very important pipeline that was taking the oil sands, crude oil coming out of Canada, Alberta, Canada, and bringing that crude oil down to our refineries along the Gulf Coast that have the technological expertise to refine that particular product. So with President Biden's executive order, with a stroke of a pen, he canceled, he halted, he revoked, whatever word you want to use, the Keystone XL pipeline, putting thousands of union workers out of jobs and really sending a very unstable signal to our allies in Canada. I mean, this is truly a significant step backwards, both for environmental progress and our economic recovery. And as I said before, pipelines are the safest, most environmentally friendly way to transport energy, and the economy simply can't recover at full speed unless we deliver reliable energy from where it is to where it's needed. I mean, take a look at it from an emissions standpoint. So pipelines reduce the utilization and congestion of more carbon-intensive modes of transportation. So making pipelines, though, the most environmentally friendly way to move energy resources from producing regions to consumer markets. So really, what this signal is sending is that, okay, well, rather than, you know, us transporting this in the most safest and efficient way, there'll be other modes of transportation that will be used to take this resource from Canada to the Gulf Coast.
We are talking with Stephanie Catarino-Wissman, who is executive director of the American Petroleum Institute here in Pennsylvania. The president has made climate change a major issue, and they want to reach this net zero carbon emissions, as you have mentioned. What is needed, though, is natural gas, which has played a big role already in reducing carbon emissions in Pennsylvania. Talk about how important Pennsylvania's natural gas industry is to actually helping the president reach that goal.
We have long held that any action to address climate change has got to be global in nature, and that's why we at API, we support the ambitions of the Paris Agreement, including global action to reduce greenhouse gas emissions. And models show that this agreement between nations cannot be achieved without access to natural gas. We are climate leaders in the United States. No other nation has cut CO2 emissions more than the U.S. has since year 2000. And natural gas is no doubt powering our cleaner future. So in Pennsylvania, we are the number two natural gas producer in the nation, only behind Texas. So we play a leading role in producing this cleaner natural gas. And again, you're never going to reach these climate goals without cleaner natural gas, period.
And in terms of this industry in Pennsylvania, the natural gas that has really propelled our economy and in many counties, particularly in the northern tier parts of western Pennsylvania, have been, as you pointed out earlier in the interview, a complete game changer. As our state legislature and the governor move toward adopting a new budget for the 2021-22 fiscal year, the governor, again, as he has every year, is proposing a severance tax on natural gas. Give us a little bit of information on that. The governor would have you believe that natural gas isn't really taxed enough, but we already do have several layers of taxation on it, do we not?
Yes, we do. Absolutely. And for those that are keeping a score at home, this is the seventh time in 7 years that Governor Wolf has proposed an additional tax on the natural gas industry in Pennsylvania, the so-called severance tax. Governor Wolf's severance tax plan would undo the progress, undermine our economic recovery, risk good-paying jobs supported by the natural gas industry in this state. And to your point about what we're already paying in taxes, so not only does the natural gas industry pay every other business tax that every other industry pays in the state, we have a unique tax that has been imposed on us since 2012 per Act 13 of 2012 in Pennsylvania, which is called the impact fee. Now, in law, it's called a fee, but quite frankly, I think we can call it a tax. Let's call it for what it really is. No other state has this unique tax on their natural gas industry. And since 2012, the industry has paid nearly $2 billion to all 67 counties in the state and being used for things like road and bridge repairs, water and sewer system upgrades, public safety projects and environmental programs such as Growing Greener grants. All this information can be found on the Public Utility Commission's website. So, and that's what's so unique about this tax is that it's just not going into the general fund to be spent on anything, right, at the whim of whether it's the governor or the legislature. And that's what the crafters of the legislation in 2012 were very adamant about, is to making sure that the counties, particularly the ones that are realizing the impacts of the drilling, get most of the monies from this particular impact fee. But it's so important to say that all 67 counties are receiving monies from this impact fee.
We have been again talking with Stephanie Catarino-Wissman, who is Executive Director of the American Petroleum Institute here in Pennsylvania. Stephanie, tell us a little bit about API, the American Petroleum Institute, what it is you do, and where folks can go on the web to learn more.
The American Petroleum Institute of Pennsylvania is a division of API, which is based in D.C. I am here in our offices in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, and we are the only national trade organization that represents all aspects of the natural gas and oil industry. So we have around 600 members that produce, process, transport, refine, and supply the natural gas and oil industry. And our organization is 101 years old, and in addition to being an advocacy organization, we were actually founded as a standard-setting organization. So we have 700 recommended practices and industry standards, and roughly half of those are incorporated by reference into state and federal regulation.
Stephanie Catarino-Wissman of the American Petroleum Institute here in Pennsylvania. Stephanie, again, your website will be...
It is www.api.org.
Stephanie Catarino-Wissman, thank you for being with us.
Thank you so much for having me, Lohman.
Rather than focus on tax policy and a regulatory climate that encourages business development in Pennsylvania, state government attempts to pick winners and losers through grants and loans. That usually doesn't work out too well. Frank Gamrat and Eric Montardi from the Allegheny Institute for Public Policy in Pittsburgh look at the experience of one Westmoreland County company. Eric?
Hello and welcome to the Allegheny Institute Report on the Lincoln Institute Radio Journal. I'm your host, Frank Gamrat, and with me today is Allegheny Institute Research Director Eric Montardi. You put out another fantastic policy brief, which our listeners can download and read on our website, AlleghenyInstitute.org. And while they're there, they can even sign up for a free one that comes to their email box every week. But in this particular gem, we talk about a company called Aquion and some public subsidies that they received to set up shop in Westmoreland County. Could you please tell our listeners who is Aquion?
Aquion was a company that made renewable energy batteries. I think it was something that had to do with like salt water. It was a project or a company that spun out of the universities in Pittsburgh, and as you mentioned, ended up setting up shop in Westmoreland County. They were at the what was once known as the Volkswagen plant, then it was the Sony plant, and now is just known as the Westmoreland.
The empty plant.
The Westmoreland plant. Mm-hmm. And as they spun out almost a decade ago, the state came through with an economic development subsidy package for them. About 4 years ago, we wrote about the company because they actually happened to declare bankruptcy. That was kind of interesting because obviously you have situations where the state or local governments will give economic development incentives to the company. Companies will say, we're going to create X number of jobs. They fall short. And there may be some process where the government tries to possibly get some of the money back if they can actually determine the company did fall short and we want to recoup some of the money. But this was an interesting situation here because the company declared bankruptcy and the state at the time said,
after they got the money.
Right. Yeah. Not long. It was basically like 5 years afterwards.
So you have to ask the question, who's doing the due diligence over at the Department of Community and Economic Development? You think you do a little background check on these folks. They received quite a few different grants and subsidies you have listed here. And this is pretty neat. Alternative Clean Energy Grant, Opportunity Grant, Discovered and Developed in PA Grant, Alternative Clean Energy Loan, Machinery and Equipment Fund Loan. I like that. Just called a MELF. In addition, they received Pennsylvania Industrial Development Authority multi-award to customize the space for the company. So here we have in Westmoreland County a plant that at one time used to make Volkswagens, and then Volkswagen up and left, and then we brought in Sony to make televisions, and then Sony up and leaves, and the space was emptier for a while, and here comes Aquion, a fairly new company, and the state throws a lot of money at them, a couple million dollars to say the least, with really, in our estimation, not doing their due diligence to find out if this was a solid company. A couple years later, they declare bankruptcy. So the question is, okay, we throw them money. Do we get anything back? Does DCED have any provisions to recoup money on behalf of taxpayers when something like this happens?
They have these general outlines to say, like, if a company doesn't meet a job creation goal, that they will attempt to recoup the money. I mean, basically, that's termed a clawback, where it might be a grant. There's a various other penalties that the state can put on companies. I think it might vary from the type of incentives that are put forward. But again, with this situation here, there was the additional complication that if they say, well, we're bankrupt, right, and we're actually going to bankruptcy court, and then there's like a liquidation of assets possibly, what happens in terms of can we get the taxpayer money back in the normal process of, the company's operating, but they said they were going to create 500 jobs and only created 250. Here we have something where they said, well, we're actually going to court. We're declaring bankruptcy.
Right. And like we said, they got a lot of different grants. And in the brief here, you total it up. $16.6 million in subsidies was given to Aquion to start this plant up in Westmoreland County. They declare bankruptcy. How much did we get back?
As of today, the state's recovered $1.2 million. And that's basically, there were two payments made both in February of 2019. This was a research here trying to go to DCED and go through the open records process to find out, you know, did they get anything back at some point. And that's where they are now. And there's basically looking at those five different sources of subsidies. It was a reply to the two loans at this point.
Right.
You know, that's where they are. So as of today, that's about 7% or so of the direct money that was given to the company.
All right. And your best estimate, what's the odds that we recover the other 93%?
Well, you figure at this point, there's nothing that's come back from the grants.
Right.
So would any, you know, that's like maybe, it's almost like a 50-50 split, I think, between the loans and the grants that went to the company. If we say that they're not going to get anything of that back, that takes away 50% of the package. Mm-hmm. It's going to take, just like it did with this piece, you know, going back and questing records and finding out in some time after time has passed, did they get anything back? I don't know what the situation with the company is. From published reports, they terminated their lease in 2017. They moved overseas. This
better salt water.
This payment came.
Not a lot of salt water in Pittsburgh.
this payment came in, or these two payments came in February 2019. So I'm not really sure where the bankruptcy process stands at this point. Certainly, it's worth investigating again at some point in the future.
All right, so we can say that DCD should have done their due diligence. They should have looked this company up, took a look at their finances a little carefully. You mentioned in the brief that there were two audits of DCED, one by the Attorney General's office and one by the Independent Fiscal Office. What did those audits find?
The Auditor General's audit came in 2014, and then they updated that in 2018. So this was after all the Aquion bankruptcy and the pledge to get the money back. That audit and the update itself was, the auditor general at the time was looking at how successful is DCED in holding these companies to their job promises. Right. Point in 2014 said, well, there's various stages where penalties have been applied. Some of the money's been recovered. Some of it was in litigation. And then this update that came in 2018 said DCED's kind of followed through on the 13 recommendations that the 2014 audit made, including holding companies to their promises. There was just two examples in this update where the state got $350,000 back. Right. I mean, again, not a huge amount for two companies that closed down. And then the Independent Fiscal Office, they basically have been given a mandate by the General Assembly to look at all the departments in the state sort of on a rotating basis to do something called a performance-based budget. And one of the things they looked at was all of DCED's business attraction and financing programs. And again, three different programs. So like, I think there's been obviously new programs that have been created or been renamed. They looked at how much was spent on these from these three programs on business attraction, and it's close to $200 million. Wow. And then how much was clawed back because some company or companies didn't follow through on their promises. That was like $6 million. But
wow.
I mean, overall, I mean, the point that I think is being made here is that the economic development is government directed. It's just an area that just shouldn't be done. It's just an area that the government doesn't need to be involved with. And then you have situations like this where they hand the money out and then the company doesn't follow through on the promises. Then you're going through the process of how do you get the money back? And then when the money comes back, what do they do with it? It probably goes right back into the economic development spending.
Well, like we've said, government should not be in the job of picking economic winners and losers, because the government typically loses in that fashion. I'd like to thank Eric again for joining me today. If you'd like more information on this or other topics, please visit our website at AlleghenyInstitute.org. Thank you for listening.
Rather than spending trillions on questionable infrastructure projects, the federal government should be encouraging public-private partnerships to improve roads and bridges. Ashley Klingensmith from Americans for Prosperity, Pennsylvania, has this Lincoln Radio Journal commentary.
A $4 trillion price tag accompanies President Biden's infrastructure proposal, originating from the two plans, the American Jobs Plan and the American Families Plan, that we discussed a couple of weeks ago. We discussed all the policies Congress shouldn't consider or pass that are included in the plan. Today, we're going to discuss what Congress should do and what Congress should consider. They should use this debate as an opportunity to institute major reforms to our federal funding and regulatory systems. Reforms are badly needed to improve outcomes, target spending toward critical projects, and streamline much-needed maintenance and construction projects. The goal should be a more modern and efficient national infrastructure system that will allow people and goods to move where they need to, both safely and economically, contributing to an effective and well-functioning system of free enterprise. So Congress should preserve federal infrastructure dollars for targeted construction projects of a national priority and stop spending gas tax revenues on non-highway projects. Currently, more than 28% of the money in the Highway Trust Fund is diverted away from roads and bridges to other projects. The Highway Trust Fund was created to fund repairs and updates to roads and bridges, not subsidize ferry boats, bike paths, and highway beautification. Second, Congress should unleash private investment in infrastructure assets. America should tap the innovative potential of public-private partnerships, which attract private capital and expertise. Canada, Europe, and Britain have used public-private partnerships extensively, and they have successfully been used in the U.S. for efforts such as the Dulles Greenway Project and the Capital Beltway Project, both in Northern Virginia. Their use in the U.S. has been quite limited, despite the lower costs and better outcomes that public-private partnerships typically experience. Third, Congress should return power and responsibility to the states wherever possible. Infrastructure projects that are a true public good, but that do not rise to the level of national importance, should be funded and executed by state and local authorities, not the federal government. Fourth, Congress should overhaul the regulatory and permitting system to improve outcomes and efficiency. The many burdensome regulatory requirements and duplicative permitting processes required to undertake infrastructure projects substantially increase the cost to taxpayers and slow down the completion of projects, often by years. In fact, the time from concept to completion of infrastructure projects has tripled over the past 3 decades. Last, Congress should eliminate costly and unfair labor restrictions. Policies that reward unions and union workers, such as the Davis-Bacon and project labor agreements, distort the labor market by dictating how individuals can be employed, preventing resources from being used effectively by raising costs and delaying completion. As Congress debates the Biden proposal, it should focus on these alternative solutions that would actually help rebuild our economy, make improvements to real infrastructure, and address other critical needs without massive tax increases and without trillions of dollars in new spending. It is up to us to take a stand for our kids and grandkids who are unable to now, but whose ability to pursue their American dream is going to be unnecessarily hindered by the decisions that are being made on Capitol Hill today. We ask you to visit StopTheSpendingSpree.com and sign and share that letter. It's going to go directly to your congressman or congresswoman and our senators, both Toomey and Casey. Speaker Pelosi maintains her commitment to seeing these bills receive a vote in her chamber prior to the 4th of July. Let's make certain that timeline becomes an impossibility due to the increased pushback she receives from her House members. I'm Ashley Klingensmith, State Director with Americans for Prosperity. Find us on Facebook by searching at PAAFP and on Twitter by searching at AFP Pennsylvania.
The 2021 Pennsylvania Leadership Conference is now just 3 weeks away. After being virtual last year, an in-person conference will be held June 11 and 12 at the Radisson Penn-Harris Convention Center in Camp Hill. The Pennsylvania Leadership Conference is the premier gathering of conservative activists each year here in the Keystone State. This year's featured speakers will be Jesse Waters, host of Waters World on the Fox News Channel, Fox News contributor Jason Chaffetz, along with John Gizzi of Newsmax. Complete information and registration for the 2021 Pennsylvania Leadership Conference can be found at paleadershipconference.com. If you miss hearing Lincoln Radio Journal on your favorite radio station, audio of our complete program is available on our websites, LincolnRadioJournal.com and LincolnInstitute.org. The Lincoln Radio Journal is produced weekly by the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. The Lincoln Institute is completely funded through the generosity of individuals, corporations, and philanthropic foundations, including the Houston Foundation of Coatesville, the Allegheny Foundation of Pittsburgh, and the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association, all of whom have helped to underwrite the costs of this program. Lincoln Radio Journal is a trademark of the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. Comments and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Lincoln Institute or of this radio station. From the Lincoln Broadcast Center in Harrisburg, I'm Loman Henry. Thank you for listening to Pennsylvania's most widely broadcast public affairs radio program, Lincoln Radio Journal. Plug into the pulse of Pennsylvania. We'll be right back.
Thank you.